You're listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, a church with a heart for the gospel. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.
Two words. God wept. This passage that we've heard this morning from John chapter 11 and John's other book, the Revelation chapter 21, both of them are deep passages. I don't think we'll ever plumb the depths of them, ever hit bottom. But besides all their depth, they also have a certain amount of simplicity and brevity to them. In fact, it was, I think, a certain amount of smugness among some people in the youth group that I grew up in. I remember being at one of those, it was kind of like a Bible trivia night, and this shows you how pathetic my biblical knowledge was at the time, but it was asked, what's the shortest verse in the Bible? And just, it felt like almost everyone else's arms shot up but mine. John 11:35, Jesus wept, is the shortest verse. But I think it's important to remember that God wept. Jesus is God incarnate, and he experienced every dimension of human life, companionship and joy, as well as every grief, loss, and pain that we experience. The writer of Hebrews put it this way, since the children have flesh and blood, Jesus too shared in their humanity so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. Jesus then shares in our humanity, all of it, all of it. In John 11 we see him share in grief alongside his dear friends Martha and Mary in front of the tomb of Lazarus, their brother. I've been interrogating this recently. Who is Jesus' closest friend? The writer of the Gospel of John seems to suggest there was a beloved one. In my opinion, and this is just an opinion, I think maybe it was Lazarus. It was Lazarus. Jesus, who before his tomb weeps, who expresses deep emotion. In some ways, though, I'm surprised at some of his words that he says, particularly to Lazarus' sisters. I mean, Jesus, after all, knew that he was the resurrection and life. He's just told Martha that in verse 25 in the passage just prior to the one that we heard read this morning. Jesus knew that he had power to raise Lazarus. Jesus could have been jovial and maybe even a little bit patronizing and said something like, oh, Martha, oh, Mary, everything's going to be all right. Don't you worry your little heads about this. I'm going to fix it all. But he didn't do that. Instead, knowing who he was and what he could do, he entered into the human condition of grief and sorrow. God wept. But what is foreshadowed in the next scene, in the resuscitation of Lazarus and certified in his own resurrection, is that Jesus will reunite heaven and earth. This is told in John's final vision, that beautiful and amazing portion that we heard in Revelation chapter 21. Jesus will reunite heaven and earth. The closing words, basically, of the biblical story. And of course, this closing scene builds on what has gone before in the story of salvation, including places like Isaiah 25, where the promise was made there that at the end, God will wipe every tear from our eyes. God will swallow up death forever and wipe away the tears from all faces. John's final vision, Revelation 21, the Bible's final vision, is one of new creation. The biblical story begins quite logically with a beginning. As it draws to an end in Revelation 21, maybe not quite so logically, it does so also with a beginning. The sin-corrupted creation of Genesis is restored in the renewed creation of Revelation. The product of these beginning and ending acts of creation is the same: the heavens and the earth in Genesis, and a new heaven and new earth in Revelation. The story that has creation for its first word has creation for its last word. Or as T.S. Eliot states, the end is where we start from. John's vision answers the prayer that we say, some of us daily and most of us weekly in our corporate worship. John shows us God's name being hallowed, his kingdom coming, his will being done on earth as it is in heaven. John immerses us in the realities of God's reign in our lives. Heaven is not something spiritual or remote or disembodied. Rather, it is embodied and close and intimate. Heaven is intimate enough to be concerned with soft tears alongside that big bully, death. What this immersion into God realities is intended to do is to shape our perspective, our worldview, our imagination. We learn to interpret earth in terms of heaven, not the other way around. As Eugene Peterson notes, if we interpret in the wrong direction, we live either in mediocrity, unaware of the glories just past our perceptions, or in dreams that are useless to the lives we have. Immersion into God realities also has the effect of reviving our obedience and fortifying our hope for the long haul. The point is to help us practice resurrection now, to practice in advance what will be true in the future. If you know the outcome of something, and that outcome is good, extraordinary in fact, would that free you up now? I think it should. For example, if you knew that you would receive a $1 billion inheritance in a year, would you skimp on things now, or would that free you up to live generously? Again, I'm just learning this culture in the South around college football. But I've watched some people watch games, and I've watched them watch rather anxiously. I wonder if they could enjoy it just a little bit more if they knew that the outcome would be that their team would win. If they knew that, could they just kind of enjoy the minutes passing by rather than pleading in front of their TVs, "Oh Lord, let us not go to Tennessee again this year." I don't know. I'm just guessing about things. But if you knew that the outcome to a surgery, more seriously, would be wildly successful, would that ease your anxiety heading into it? I'm not sure if any of those analogies are helpful, but the point is we know that everything will be okay in the new heaven and the new earth. All shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well, says Julian of Norwich. Everything is secure, and because of that, I think the biblical story we have been given is to shape our lives now, energizing us for courageous and hopeful witness now. But what about those tears? God wept. Eric Clapton's poignant song, Tears in Heaven, written after the tragic death of his young son, suggests that there won't be tears in heaven. Maybe he was unaware or aware of the promises in Isaiah and Revelation. I'm not sure, but the song does suggest that he doesn't belong in heaven. And in one sense, I think he's right. None of us belong or deserve heaven, and that is why heaven comes to us. That is why God comes to us on earth. There are a lot of things that are absent, that don't belong in that reunion of heaven and earth. We're told some of these things in our passage that we heard this morning in Revelation 21. For example, there is no sea. In the biblical story, the sea represents the forces of chaos, but in the new city, the forces of chaos are gone. It says a little bit further in chapter 21, there will be no longer the character traits that are inconsistent with the kingdom of God. There will be no cowardice, no deceitfulness, no murder, no immorality, no idolatry. It also says later in the chapter as well that there will be no temple. No temple. Why? Because the whole city, the New Jerusalem, the whole people of God is the temple. It also says there will be no need for sun or moon to shine upon it. John doesn't say that the city has no sun or moon, but there is no need for them to shine because God dwells everywhere, illuminating everything. It also says there will be no closed gates. The new city is not a jail. And it is not a fortress. It is not reserved just for people of a certain race or gender or age. The new city has no closed gates. It also says there will be no longer any curse. After Adam and Eve lost their hunger for God and disobeyed his one command to them, to aspire to the knowledge that makes them independent from God, Eden came under a curse. The ground was cursed. Relationships were cursed. But in the new city, there will be no longer any curse. And blessings will have so overrun reality that there is no trace of the curse of futility and frustration, only of blessing, of mercy and grace. And then, importantly, as you heard, there will be no more death, no mourning, no pain, and no tears in the new heaven and new earth. Do tears ever mark your face? As I've gotten older, I find I weep more often. I know of some individuals who never cry. Maybe they can't physiologically. But I wonder what they do with the pain and the sadness, with the love and the connection, with the suffering and regret that all of us are touched with in life. Personally, I don't think that all tears are bad. In fact, at best, tears can be used to pave the way to healing and restoration and joy. They can mark deep pain, but they can also mark deep love. What we are promised in the marriage of heaven and earth is an end to mourning and all pain and all death. It is almost too good to be true. It's almost too hard to get our minds wrapped around, and I, for one, have a hard time getting my emotions around that. But it's true. Jürgen Moltmann, again, gets it right on this count. He says, God weeps with us so that we may one day laugh with him. Tish Harrison Warren does a good job in raising some poignant what-ifs in her provocative and really helpful book, Prayer in the Night, for those who work or watch or weep. She writes, Christians believe that a place of eternal joy not only exists but is more real than the diminished place of sorrow and pain we now know. The image of God wiping away our tears could, of course, be a metaphor, a statement that all things will at last be well. But what if it's not strictly poetic language? What if, in the face of our Maker, we get one last chance to honor all the losses this life has brought? What if we can stand before God someday and hear our life stories told for the first time accurately and in their entirety with all the twists and turns and meaning we couldn't follow when we lived through them? What if the story includes all the darkness of suffering, all the wounds we've received and given to others, all the horror of capital D, death, and we get to weep one last time with God himself? What if before we begin to live in a world where all things are made new, we weep with the one who alone is able to permanently wipe away our tears? The promise from the God who weeps, I think, is yes. Yes. Yes, says Jesus, I am coming. I am coming to the tomb of Lazarus. I am coming to the graveside of your loved one. I'm coming to you in your darkest hour, in your deepest shame, in your crippling anxiety. I am coming to wipe away all the sad tears. He who testifies to all these things says, yes, I am coming soon. Come, Lord Jesus, come.
You've been listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent. If you live in Birmingham or find yourself visiting, we hope you'll join us for one of our Sunday services. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.